Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I was speaking to my colleague, expert on all things geopolitical, Nicholas Lorimer, over the weekend, and we were wondering whether or when Joe Biden would pull out of the race for the election. And Nicholas said to me, probably by Tuesday, and it seems like it was by Sunday evening our time yesterday. So, Nick, you were a bit wrong, but you're generally not wrong. What had made this? What particular event, if it was the particular event, made this eventuate? And what's your reaction to his immediate support for his vice president Kamala Harris as the candidate to challenge Trump?
So ever since Joe Biden announced that he would run for re-election, despite initially promising that he would be the bridge to future leaders in the Democratic Party, there have been these questions revolving around him about whether he was too old for the job, whether he could really perform as a candidate and as a president on the international stage. And all of that really came to a head in the first debate our last debate between candidates Trump and Biden that was held in June, where Biden gave a performance that was one of the worst that any American presidential candidate had done in the history of television debates. He mumbled, he got confused in certain answers, he looked old and shaky, his voice was kind of hoarse. Him and his supporters later said that he had a cold, but it was clear that he was not at his best. This follows a report that earlier came out in the year that he would not be charged for mishandling of classified documents because the prosecutor or the person investigating the case found that while it's likely that he did do some wrongdoing when it came to the handling of classified details or documents, that he was, in fact, too much of a well-meaning old man for any jury to put away in jail, that basically they'd go soft on him. And so this all sort of culminated after that debate performance when Biden very aggressively said that he was staying in the race, even as his poll numbers began to slip across the country and the election seemed to be going very much in Donald Trump's favor. Things got even worse for the Democrats when the attempted assassination of Donald Trump drove more sympathy for Trump, which is a quality that he's often not able to get much of a stake of in the public sphere outside of his support base. And so the Democrats were looking down the barrel of almost certain defeat with a candidate who didn't seem like he was able to energetically and enthusiastically go out and campaign. And so behind the scenes, Democratic leaders pushed very hard for his removal. They didn't want to make the fight public because it would be very bad for party morale and unity. That being said, so much was leaked to the media that it became clear that everyone from Barack Obama to the Clintons to Nancy Pelosi to Chuck Schumer, who are all senior Democratic leaders, were all pressuring him behind the scenes. Biden appears to have sort of retreated into a very close-knit bubble, mostly with his family, with his wife apparently being the main proponent of him staying in the race. And then on Sunday, in what was a very unusual announcement, he announces that he's dropping out. And this announcement was unusual, firstly, because the statement that he was dropping out was posted first on X or Twitter, rather than on the White House website. And it also was not accompanied by a speech or by any kind of rally speech or anything like that, or televised address. He just announced it, and one gets the sense that he really, really didn't want to go, and I suspect he was actually probably too maybe emotional or angry to actually give the speech. That's my speculation. And so the statement said that he would basically give a speech announcing his dropping out of the race later in the week, but that he wasn't going to do it now. So I think the party essentially forced him, and it wasn't just the party. Two-thirds of Democrats were polled as wanting him essentially to drop out as the candidate. But on the way out, he endorsed his vice presidential candidate, Kamala Harris. That endorsement was very swiftly followed by a large number of endorsements from across Democratic leadership, with the notable exception of Barack Obama, who has not endorsed any particular candidate yet. Now, Kamala Harris is not confirmed as the Democratic nominee. That would be decided at the Democratic National Convention, which will be held 3 weeks into August. So 2 weeks into August, not long from now, less than a month from now. And but with all of these strong endorsements behind her and the fact that she was Biden's vice president and some of the logistical worries about whether, the campaign machinery would be able to transfer to any other potential candidate, I think it's very likely that Kamala will indeed be Biden's successor. It's not a done deal yet, but I think that's definitely where the safe money bets are.
Nick, would the problem that any other candidates suffer from is trying to go up against someone who's been the vice president for the last near 4 years, is female, is considered in American terms to be black. Those are all elements that Biden major put in place when he came into the presidency, and that is what he wanted. And it was she was very much a choice to meet those criteria, particularly given the fact that she hadn't performed terribly well in the Democratic debates for the prospective candidates in 2019. Surely there's almost no one who could overcome that particular categorization, those criteria.
It would be very awkward for the Democrats to try and replace her. Firstly, because of some of those identity things that you say, particularly the Democratic Party is very focused on identity politics and empowerment of marginalized groups, minorities, that kind of thing. And if a woman who's of half South Asian descent, half African American descent was passed over in favor of, you know, like a guy like Andy Beshear from Kentucky or Gavin Newsom, it would definitely annoy many people within the party's more progressive factions. It would be seen as very insulting to her, and also it would be seen as insulting to Biden's pick, right? This was the person he said could take over if he died, which even back when he was elected in 2020 was not, you know, something that was a completely remote, insane possibility. And yet, there's still opposition to her within the party, I think, and why she's not 100% secured as the nominee, because she's not a very talented politician. She was quite successful within the California environment where she originally comes from. She was a senator for California. But when she launched her failed presidential bid in 2019, she did not perform particularly well. She tried to run to the left of the Democratic Party and to the left of Biden, who ultimately defeated her. And she dropped out fairly early on after a not very impressive performance. I think she never got more than about sort of 5 or 6% in the polls. Maybe misremembering that, but it wasn't a great performance. And I think that all dogged her reputation and her image in the public. Most Americans still probably don't know who she is, even though she was the vice president and even though she did run for president. But those who know who she is kind of know of her as this sort of a person who simultaneously tried to run as a sort of progressive far left candidate, but also someone who came off as fake in that role. And I think that's a big problem for her, that she's going to have to very quickly reverse. Another reason why I think she's likely to be the candidate is because some of her strong opponents, people like Josh Shapiro, Andy Beshear, Gavin Newsom, would like to run a campaign where they can sort of set the terms, where they can run it from the beginning to the end and have a whole strategy for the whole thing. In American election terms, 3 months is a very short amount of time. American elections go on forever and ever and ever. This is, you know, by South African or British standards, this is not a super long election, sort of 3 months or whatever, because the voting is in November. But in American presidential terms, Kamala is going to have to run a sprint rather than a marathon. And I think many other potential candidates don't want to firstly be blamed for maybe getting Trump back into the White House, and also would like to run a campaign on their terms from the beginning. So they've kind of passed it now as a little bit of a, what you might call a hospital pass to Kamala, saying, well, you know, you're the vice president. You were probably not going to win the nomination if you tried yourself. So you can do it. If you win, the Democrats will hail you as a hero for all eternity. And if you lose, well, then we'll get to have our place in the sun next time, the country will no doubt have a very different view on how things have gone after sort of 4 years of a Trump term. So it's an interesting position for Kamala to be in, and I think the fact that it's a sprint actually probably benefits her. You know, I don't think she's been very charismatic, and one of the major criticisms of her as an elected official has been that she's very bad at building a team around her. In fact, one of the reasons why her reputation in the public sphere is bad is because she fell out with a bunch of her senior staff who then leaked nasty stories about her to the media. This is actually a similar problem that Trump had during his presidency, was he fell out with many of his chiefs of staff and such, who would then tell the media nasty stories about him. So she's going to have to very quickly build a strong staff around her. Barack Obama managed to secure his powerful political impact with the help of his chief strategist, David Axelrod. George W. Bush had Karl Rove. There were a whole bunch of, you know, very clever strategists in the Clinton White House. And of course, also Hillary Clinton, who supported her husband, Bill, through all of that. So, American presidents are often the leaders of a team, really, rather than singular figures. Trump is actually kind of an exception in that regard. And so this is a weakness that Kamala is, on a sort of technical level, really going to have to fill now. She's going to have to go out there and win a good team to her side who can help her to devise a strategy to rebuild herself as a candidate. Because right now she's not super popular. However, Trump isn't super popular either. And while Biden's popularity numbers were dipping very quickly after that debate performance, Kamala's and Trump's are pretty much tied at the moment. They're both at around 11-12% unfavorability nationally, which is not very good. You want that number to be positive rather than negative. So I think once again, we've re-entered a stage we've gone from a position where it looked like an inevitable Republican victory to now looking once again more like a sort of 50-50 proposition. That all comes down to two things, though. Is the Trump campaign going to be able to retool their very focused message that was very focused on exploiting Biden's weaknesses as being old, as being kind of not energetic, to attacking Kamala? And is Kamala going to make good strategic choices going forward? If she doesn't, she may well see her popularity crash as more voters get to know her and pay attention to her. And otherwise, she has perhaps a chance to reinvent herself, which might allow her to eke out a victory. But yeah, still very uncertain times.
Well, there don't seem to be anything other than strong opinions one way or the other. Just from a sort of my perspective, she looks like she would have to sound serious, among other things. It's a matter of her choices, but it's also a matter of looking like she is, like she needs to grasp the issues. Are the issues, are the seeming concerns of the voters, the extent to which inflation had hit people's pockets and the border, the illegal immigration, are those issues going to be secondary to the quality, or not the quality, but perhaps the lack of quality of the debate between the two, between Trump and Harris? Is it really going to be sort of fun and games of each other attacking each other for the next 3 months and seeing who hits hardest and scores first? Or is she capable of sort of looking like the serious contender and making Trump, you know, exploiting his weaknesses?
Yeah, so on the issues, this is a little bit difficult because, you know, this campaign, I think, has been very bogged down in personalities, even more so than usual. Presidential election campaigns often get bogged down in the personalities of the candidates rather than necessarily a lot of the issues, but I think even more so for this particular time. Harris, in a sense, doesn't have a great record to run on. She's got some baggage from the Biden years. Biden gave her a lot of very unpleasant, unwinnable situations, such as he told her to fix the border, even when his own party didn't seem to have any kind of a clear policy on how to deal with the big surge of illegal immigrants coming across the American southern border. She's been kind of, every time there was an unpopular a campaign issue that the Biden White House didn't want to deal with. They gave it to Kamala. And that's going to be painful for her to overcome, because she's going to have to sort of distance herself from those things, because she was tied very publicly to all of the lowest moments of the Biden campaign for the most part, with the exception of the withdrawal from Afghanistan, which I think she had very little to do with. So she can probably escape on that front. But so on issues, inflation is a big one. The American economy is actually in a reasonable place at the moment, but the reason that many Americans have very negative views of the economy right now is simply because of the fact that inflation has been hitting a lot of people's pocketbooks. Inflation is universally in every single country in the world a very unpopular issue. It makes whoever's in charge, regardless of who's to blame for it, very unpopular. Mm. Biden certainly didn't help the inflationary period with a big spending bill very early on in his presidency. But that also has begun to cool in recent months, so that will probably help her to some degree. Immigration, this is an issue that's definitely in Trump's favor. There's been record numbers of people crossing illegally the U.S. southern border. And the Democratic Party is very split on the issue. Trump's plan is very clear. He just wants to basically, he's promising to do mass deportations of everyone who they can find who's an illegal immigrant. The Democrats are kind of split between a more moderate faction who wants to beef up security on the southern border and stop the flow of people, while at the same time kind of finding a way to regularize the several million illegal immigrants who have entered the country and kind of put down roots already. And the other faction of the Democratic Party, who basically believe that border enforcement is, you know, immoral in of itself, and have a kind of sort of completely open borders thing. And the tension between those two factions and the Democrats has prevented them from being able to enact a sort of coherent policy. That being said, America hasn't had a particularly coherent policy on how to deal with immigration for the last, I would say, at least 30 years, if not longer. So it wouldn't be particularly new. You know, no one has managed to actually crack this nut. So that's probably still going to be a bit of an issue for her. Her benefit is that most Americans tend to be in favor of abortion rights. Kamala Harris has been pretty solidly in favor of abortion rights across the U.S. throughout her campaign. And so that will definitely be, and she'll be able to, crucially, in a way that Biden couldn't, because Biden was too sort of old and doddering, articulate the position on abortion rights. And this is one of the reasons why they felt they had to get rid of Biden, is because he just couldn't perform on the campaign trail. He just couldn't make the argument for some of these issues. Foreign policy, you know, Trump says lots of different things to lots of different people. He sort of presents, we're going to pull back from supporting Ukraine on one side, but then he also tells a different crowd that we're going to make sure Ukraine is strong and defeats Russia, and I'm going to threaten Putin. It depends which audience he's talking to. So, you know, Trump foreign policy is, you know, your guess is as good as mine. I think Kamala will probably, she's sort of in the past been a bit of a moderate on the issue. She was, during her Senate time, for example, relatively more pro-Israel than anti-Israel. She was kind of on the right of the Democratic Party in terms of that. However, since during her tenure as vice president, she's kind of been sort of hedging her bets, being very supportive of Israel initially, but then kind of weakening rhetorically and then attacking Israel as the post-October 7th war has gone on in Gaza. So yeah, I think on that front, a lot of this is going to be down to how she actually realigns herself. You know, what policy positions does she choose? And the names for vice presidential picks she's kicking around, if she does become the Democratic nominee, are mostly swing state governors or senators who have appeal sort of to more moderate voters. And so I think she'll be in a good position if she picks one of those candidates, because it will be part of trying to reinvent herself as less of a progressive and more of a moderate. Because if the Trump campaign manages to paint her as a sort of a far left progressive California Democrat, she's going to be in trouble, because that's not, you know, that's an appeal. That's a kind of politician who appeals in California, but won't appeal across the rest of the country. And her record in the Senate kind of supports that, but she's always had a little bit more of a kind of law and order approach. And in fact, her progressive opponents attacked her in the Democratic primary on this line. In fact, her detractors on social media in 2020 referred to her with the phrase, Kamala is a cop, which, of course, for that far left part of the Democratic Party is very much a negative. But if she wants to appeal to sort of swing state voters, she's probably actually going to have to embrace that cop image, and as you said, you know, be more serious. Right now, she sort of kind of tried to play a sort of soft, cuddly, you know, fun character, a second fiddle to Biden. But she's, you know, I think she's really struggled on the campaign stage. So she's got a lot of hurdles to overcome. But at the same time, you know, despite the sympathy generated for Trump after his assassination attempt, after the assassination attempt on him, despite his strong showing in the convention that he's just had, he remains a relatively unpopular figure. His campaign is going to have to properly retool itself now, reorient, and hammer home a message against Kamala, because if she plays her cards right, she's very likely going to give him a run for his money.
Just a comment. I would agree with you on her appearing tougher on law and order issues, because 2020 was then, and 4 years later, a number of the sort of East Coast, West Coast elites driven states have seen crime ratchet up, and I think they're in a different situation than they were in 3-4 years ago, where, you know, beating up on policemen as a force was popular, and they've reaped the consequences of that. On the other hand, to what extent, and by implication, you said it doesn't sound like it would be much, is the recent assassination attempt on Trump isn't going to have perhaps the ongoing mileage that people might have thought it would have?
I think there's two reasons for why that assassination attempt hasn't necessarily completely shifted the dial. In the past, when people have tried to kill presidents or have killed presidents, because this is not at all unprecedented in American politics. It's actually been a lot of assassinations of American presidents. You know, of course, Lincoln was the famous one and John F. Kennedy the other. But there have also been a lot of attempted assassinations over the years. Ronald Reagan, I think, being the most recent, when he was actually shot on the campaign trail in 1984. But America is a much more divided place than it was since the era of Reagan. People have much firmer views, and sort of detractors of Trump will say things along the line of, well, you know, just because he's shot doesn't mean he'll be a good president. You know, that means that the amount of support you can swing behind you from something bad happening to you is not nearly as much. Exactly the same in reverse, right? If someone had tried to shoot Biden, I suspect he may have been able to hold on to his reelection run, but he wouldn't have gained a huge number of points in his favor, for exactly some of the same reasons. Also, I think a very big part of why it didn't have, I think within the Republican Party, the attempted assassination of Trump was very unifying. I think that pushed a lot of people on the Republican side who might have been iffy about Trump firmly into his camp. But outside of that, I don't think it necessarily had the political power, because so far there's very little indication that the shooter was a political fanatic. He was trying to take down Trump because he was, you know, who he is. It's the evidence so far, and I mean, who knows, it could change as more investigations are done, but the evidence so far suggests that this was far more like those terrible school shootings in America where a kid who is, or a young man who is not particularly in a good place in life, decides to try and chase notoriety and fame by killing people. And in this case, you know, Trump showed up very close to this guy's house. He didn't travel across the country to try and shoot Trump. This was like literally a neighborhood or two away. He must have just heard that this was going to happen. He decided that he was going to try this. And, you know, it's an incredible failure of the American Secret Service that this was able to happen, because he was actually spotted several times beforehand. That being said, without that sort of supercharged political element, you know, when they uncovered this guy's social media, it wasn't exactly like he was, you know, denouncing the right-wing fascist Donald Trump and anything like that. If that had been the case, I suspect this would have swung a lot more support behind Trump. But so far, it seems, I think, to have been a I wouldn't call it a wash, but, you know, not it hasn't decisively swung things in Trump's favor. It's been of advantage to him, but it hasn't sealed the deal.
Yeah, it is an element of opportunistic, and possibly if Biden had been there instead of Trump, he might have tried to shoot him as well. There was no, very as far possibly. As one knows, political manifesto left behind. So what one's really left with is a potentially amusing in parts, entertaining in other parts, and probably fairly nasty campaign on both sides with regards to their approach to. Yes. Their opposition.
This is going to be really, really brutal. I think. I don't think there's a single chance this will be anything but nasty. The Republicans, they're not going to have a huge amount of time to define Kamala Harris, so they're going to go for her in a very big way. I've already seen on sort of Trump-aligned social media. So not. You know, this is not official party things, but people tweeting out pictures of Kamala Harris with sort of like knee pads photoshopped onto her, implying certain things about her sort of sexual activities. And likewise, there's also very nasty things being said about Trump right now. There's still a sort of conspiratorial wing on the left who have not been embraced by the, you know, leadership of the Democratic Party at all, but in the sort of support base who think that Trump even staged the assassination attempt on himself. So, you know, this is the environment that this election is being held in, where both sides do not trust each other whatsoever. And at the end of the day, a relatively small number of voters in a few states are going to make the decision. Right. And those voters tend to be some of the most switched off and least interested in politics. So a lot of this battle is going to be fought on the airwaves as each side attempts to define the other. Kamala's going to try and define herself as a tough, pragmatic defender of American democracy, and Trump is going to try and define himself as a strong, sturdy, sort of destined son who is going to return to America and restore its place in the world. Make America great again, I guess is going to be the subtext of his campaign. And in the background, they will be declaring their opponent to be, you know, treacherous, scummy, awful, you know, political prostitute kind of thing. It's going to be very, very nasty, especially with so much energy currently going on in that American race.
So from our perspective, we've really probably got to wait till 2029 to see some real adults emerge in the contestation for the position of American president, which that is another discussion, and there have been some interesting observations about that. Nick, thank you very much for joining me and putting us right on top of the conversation soonest. And we'll no doubt talk soon to see how this progresses.
Thanks very much.